Hello, it is Tuesday, July 30th. Welcome to WitWorks Radio. You are here. I am Abby Pober from Co-ops and Careers, and I'm here with two fantastic colleagues who I'm going to let introduce themselves.
Hi, it's Rhea Kalinowski, Co-op and Career Advisor.
And Robin Beauchamp, Director of Co-ops and Careers.
So today we're talking about salary negotiation. Sorry about that noise. We are moving the microphones around a little bit in here to get a better angle. Today we're going to be talking about salary negotiations. This afternoon, our seniors are picking up their caps and gowns to get ready for graduation, which means hopefully many of them are accepting job offers, have interviews lined up, and are getting ready to go out into the working world. So,
very exciting stuff.
It is. Robin, why is it important to negotiate a salary?
Oh my gosh. Jump right in there.
Yeah.
So I've come out of human resources, and I know from a human resources and employer point of view, they want to hire the best talent they possibly can, and sometimes do it at a place that they might save some money, but not in such a way that they want to pay people unfairly. But I also know, having been in human resources, that many employers don't give you every dollar that's available. So they usually hold money back. They're actually waiting for you to negotiate.
Really?
And if you don't negotiate at the time of an offer, then you're somewhat stuck into whatever kind of salary pool each employer has to give on an annual basis. So anytime you can start with more money at the very beginning, obviously increases your opportunity to make more, but it's beyond salary. You've got to really think about total compensation. So one thing that people don't realize is that when you're getting older and you're getting ready to retire, you get Social Security benefits for the most part, unless you're working for a municipality or someplace like that that has different types of pension plans. But if you're going to get Social Security, your benefits are actually based upon your salary and your wages. So the more money you can make, the higher your Social Security benefits will be.
Mm.
The other thing is, when you're at an organization where they do give retirement benefits, it's typically a percentage, again, of your salary. Mm-hmm. So once again, the higher your salary, the more your employer and you personally can contribute, because it's typically for both a percentage of your salary. So those are just two examples. You also have things like workers' compensation, unemployment benefits. Sometimes life insurance is based upon your salary. If your employer is giving it to you, sometimes it's one times your salary, two times your salary. So obviously that bottom line salary dollar impacts so much more than just your paycheck.
And bonuses and raises, subsequent raises too, would you say?
Well,
sometimes
bonuses never impact your salary. It's a one-time thing,
but
a raise goes to your salary.
Well, like a bonus could be a percentage of your salary. Like everyone could get 1% or something like that.
Sometimes there might be a bonus pool and it might be a more finite dollar amount.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're right. It could affect that.
Mm-hmm.
And raises, again, are usually a percentage of your salary.
That's right.
So as I mentioned earlier, I mean, if you start, let's make believe you start at, and I'm really bad with math, you guys, $1,000 a year, and you get a 3% raise, that's only $300.
Mm.
But if you start at $2,000 a year and you get a 3% raise, now you're at $6,000 as your, I'm sorry, $600
mm-hmm.
as your,
right?
So you can see the difference in just that easy example.
Right, mm-hmm. right.
But, you know, it's interesting to me. There's definitely a lot of truth about the gender pay gap.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it, I believe, is being a woman, we're often taught not to negotiate for ourselves, not to advocate for ourselves. A lot of women feel that if they got the job offer, they're just so happy to get that they're willing to take whatever is given to them and be thrilled. They don't want to cause trouble. They don't want to be seen as unlikable or aggressive, so they won't negotiate.
Yeah, I have a lot of students who come in my office and they're like, okay, I got this offer. I'm nervous to ask for more money. I don't know what they're going to think of me. What would you say to a student like that?
What's the worst case scenario? What do you think
I
would say to the student?
Rescind the offer?
Well, no, I don't. If they rescind the offer because you're trying to negotiate a salary, then I would actually be a little concerned about that employer.
Yeah.
Because again, negotiation is part of business.
Right.
They're negotiating contracts with their vendors or with their customers. Mm-hmm. So everybody should be comfortable with this. Mm. I think when you start a job search, if someone tells you right off the bat, hey, listen, we only have $1,000 a year to pay you.
Right.
There's no room for negotiation. So if we get to that point and I offer you a job and you try to negotiate, I'm going to have to remind you of this. That's when you don't negotiate.
Right.
But maybe there's other things you could negotiate besides salary. So I don't know if we want to go there yet, but
we can wait.
We can wait. You can negotiate other items besides salary.
We'll get to that.
We'll get to that. But that would be the only time I wouldn't negotiate salary. If somebody was really upfront with you and said, listen, this is all the money I have. And I've done that as a recruiter because I didn't want to waste anybody's time.
Right.
I don't want to have somebody come in and say, you know, I only have $1,000 and you want to make $5,000 a year. There's no way I'm ever going to be able to get to your salary requirement. So let's not waste my time or your time.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's why it's important to do some research before you even start the job search process, to have an understanding of the kind of the area of where you would be in terms of a salary range. So looking up at Glassdoor and, you know, looking to see if they have anything posted with the job description. Sometimes there's like a range or like a level of a salary that they're willing to pay, so that you're not surprised when it does come to that.
Exactly. So that's one thing that we always talk to students and any job seeker. Knowledge really is power, right? So if you know what the market will bear for the position that you're looking for, based upon your education, your directly related experience, your indirectly related experience, and let's not forget geography. You know, Boston pays significantly different than Boise.
That's for sure.
Right? So do that research, Glassdoor, salary.com.
Yeah.
What are some of the other ones that you guys can think of?
Payscale.com. And actually, it's good to check out what other Wentworth students are making. So you can actually go to our website and look at the outcomes and see what students have made in the last few years.
4 years. We have 4 years worth of data. So you can see what the class of 2015 made, 2016, 2017, and 2018, and you can drill down by major. Absolutely.
And do these, and forgive me if it's if this is a silly question, because it's been a long time since I've looked at salary information myself.
Thank goodness.
Right? So on these websites like payscale.com and Glassdoor, can you drill down by location?
Yes.
Okay.
You can actually put in a zip code and then put in a miles radius around that zip code, so it will give you a broader range of salary. But if you know that you really want Boston and you're not willing to work in like Newton or Needham, you could really drill down and say, I want like a 0 mile radius from that one zip code. And the nice thing about salary.com is the one I'm most familiar with, is you can read the job descriptions and you can kind of compare it to the job you're applying for or the job you've been offered and see of like, is this really the job? And the job titles in salary.com are, you know, very simple. It's something like, you know,
Engineer one,
Engineer two, Engineer three. And, you know, the bigger the number, the more senior they are. And they'll tell you how many years of experience is in Engineer one versus how many is in an Engineer two. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of have to look around and try to find the best match possible. And what salary.com does is it gives you the whole bell curve of the beginning, the end, the middle, first quartile, second quartile. But don't be greedy. You know, you can't just say, hey, this job pays, again, between $1,000 and $5,000 a year. Of course I want the $5,000. Who wouldn't?
Right.
But you've got to say, okay, it pays between one and five, and it's only looking for 0 to 2 years of work experience. And if that's all you have, then you're definitely in the first quartile, you know, between the first salary and maybe in the first 25% of that bell curve. But if you have beyond that, then you can ask for more money. Mm-hmm. But you also have to be careful that you're not going for jobs that you're, and I hate the word overqualified, but if it only asks for 0 to 2 years of experience and you have 5 or 8 years of experience doing that, then you're going to be bored in that job and you might want to look at something different if you have the luxury to do that.
And they won't be afford to pay you anyway what you're worth.
Right. Exactly. When you're right, the bigger the job title, probably it's going to be funded differently. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great advice. The good thing about Glassdoor, too, is that you can often find what people are actually being paid at specific companies. You know, depending on the company, depending on the role that you're looking at, you can sometimes drill down even that far. The thing about Glassdoor is that that's all like reported by people. It's like Yelp for right, companies.
It's reported by the employee.
Right, right, right.
Whereas I think salary.com and payscale.com are reported by the employer.
Yes, yeah, so definitely take everything on Glassdoor with a grain of salt, but you know, do a wide range of research.
Mm-hmm. I would research all of those and then see what makes most sense and where you can find the commonalities. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's also the NACE salary calculator. Not good. Okay, let's see. And the Bureau of Labor Statistics has an Occupational Outlook Handbook, mm-hmm. which can be useful.
Yep. The problem with the Occupational Outlook Handbook, or the OOH, is it is national and it doesn't drill down by region.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't think it does, at least unless you do some real digging, and that can be a little bit more complex. I think salary.com and PayScale are easier to use.
Yeah, I like salary.com. Yeah.
But you know, again, as women, you have to put away your anxiety and your fear and negotiate, because that's what men do. So I'm often talking about, like, negotiate like a man, you know? the sad thing is women still only earn 8 cents for every dollar.
That's white women.
I'm sorry?
That's white women.
That's white women. Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, white women. And then unfortunately, and I don't have all the stats in front of me, and I wish I did, because, oh, here we go. Here it is by ethnicity. Hang on a quick second. Women's earnings as a percentage of white men's earnings by race and ethnicity in 2017. Hispanic or Latina women made only 53 cents for every dollar.
Yikes.
Black or African American women only made 61 cents. White women, non-Hispanic, in 2017 made 77 cents. Asian women made 85 cents. American Indian or Alaskan Native only made 58 cents. And Hawaiian, Native Hawaiian, or other Pacific Islanders only made 62 cents for every dollar a white man made.
Wow. So, and where's that information from?
This is from the American Association of University Women, aauw.org. The interesting thing about this is they are doing a national push to educate women on salary negotiation. And I'm happy to say that every advisor in the Co-op and Career Office has gone through the training. And a few of us are actually now out into the community doing these free training sessions. And we're hoping to bring them to campus.
Oh, that would be so great.
And do a training for both faculty, staff, and students on how to negotiate salary.
And they offer free workshops every once in a while, too.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, the free workshops. Not to become a facilitator, but the actual workshops on training people on how to be asking for the money that they deserve. So, you know, let's talk about why some of the reasons women don't make as much money. Can you guys guess some of them?
Is there a list there?
No.
Oh.
Well, I think the first is they don't ask for more.
Yeah. Right? We don't ask. We women, female-identified people.
Do women discount their value when they return to the workforce if they have taken time off to, you know, raise a family?
Well, you just said something that up until recently, men never stepped away from the workforce.
Right.
So that's another reason, because women do take time away to raise families, and when they jump back in, they've lost all that traction. So instead of having like 7 years of work experience, they may only have one or two.
Sure.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like if they come back 9 years after they started, right. So nobody's going to pay them for the time that they were home raising their family because they weren't getting that kind of experience. So that's a big piece of it. Anything else that you can think of?
I don't know. I felt like there's always been kind of a stigma attached where if a woman is someone who's going to be taking care of the kids and they may need to like leave for doctor's appointments or like, you know, not stay late hours, you know, that's something I've always thought about. But
so the work-life balance, who's running home to take care of the children versus who's staying late.
Yeah.
And absolutely. Maybe just the roles that they end up filling. Mm-hmm. Women don't go after high-powered STEM kind of roles where you might be making a substantial amount of money. Is that
That's the big piece. That's it right there. So let's talk about what kind of roles do women tend to gravitate toward for job titles?
Administrative assistant. And I'm trying to think.
Think about what kind of jobs your mothers or your grandmothers had.
Nurse.
Teacher.
Caretaker, whether it's
librarian.
Yeah.
Mother was a librarian.
So women tend to gravitate toward the helping professions, right?
Those nonprofits, those sort of.
So as more and more women were in these roles, someone decided that they were not as valuable as those that the men were gravitating toward.
Right.
That's really interesting because I recently found out in the computer science field that women have been gravitating towards front-end developer roles, which is more of like the how the website looks and stuff like that. And so now those types of roles are being, you know, paid less, which
what?
I think is ridiculous. Yeah, than back-end.
They're being discounted, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
You still have to code.
I know.
right. So the cool thing about this is I think it was in July 1st, 2018. Can you guys think about what happened?
Massachusetts, you can no longer ask what you used to make.
Why do you think salary history is now illegal in the state of Massachusetts?
Because it's what they used to base offers on.
Yeah.
And it perpetuates the whole idea of if you got paid this, then I don't have to pay you so much as the other person who got paid more to do the same job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as someone who does a lot of interviewing, I can't ask salary history. And depending on who you talk to, can you ask salary expectations? Right? So I think the best thing any employer can do is just come right out and say what the salary range is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Transparency is key.
Absolutely.
I always hate that question. When you do go to fill out the an application, a lot of times you just end up getting a standard application when you arrive. And they're always there's always a box there that asks you, what are your salary expectations? And
right.
It just always made me feel uncomfortable to fill that out.
Well, it is uncomfortable. But again, that's where you do if you know you're going to have to fill out an application, that's where you do the research first. And you put in the whole range, put in the top and the bottom.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And then in an interview, if someone asks you that question, the best way to answer it is, based upon my research, I see an engineer one with 0 to 2 years of experience makes this range. And you say what the range is.
Mm-hmm.
Based on my experience of being, a year and a half of experience with my degree, I would expect that I would come in at this range.
Yeah.
Because again, knowledge is power. You can't argue with that.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking actual statistics and skills and experience. So you never should say, I think I'm worth this, or I think this.
Or I need this to pay my bills.
Right. And that's the other piece. And I'm glad you brought that up, Rhea. Your salary requirements have nothing to do with what your bills are.
Right.
Right?
It doesn't matter how much rent you have to pay.
It does not. It matters on how much does that job pay.
Right.
So I often use this equation. If I'm driving a old 20, a 12-year-old car, and I have no car payment, and Abby's driving a Mercedes and has a $1,200 a month car payment, does that mean she gets to ask for $1,200 or more a month because her expenses are more? And
no.
We're doing the same job and we're equally qualified?
Nope. But
so,
it's good to have an understanding of what you do need to live so that you have that in the back of your mind. Not to say that that's how you're going to negotiate, but just having the number that you need to make.
Well, certainly. But again, then you better be looking for an appropriate job that's
going
to pay you what you need.
Yeah,
but
have an awareness of that.
Again, your expenses really have nothing to do with what your value is to an employer.
Right.
So know the market, know your geography, know what the job titles are, know what the experiences that they're looking for, the education, and the skill set, and that will tell you how much you should ask for.
Right.
But again, that is the beauty of a Wentworth education, because we're graduating students with a minimum of 8 months of full-time work experience. So you can walk out the door. Those jobs that say 0 to 2 years of experience, guess what? You're almost at the halfway mark there.
Mm.
So you can ask for a higher salary than some of your friends at other schools who may have the same degree but not the same experience.
Right.
So that's why the value of a Wentworth education is much better than some of the other schools in which engineering students graduate. Mm.
Yeah, and that's really important for you to highlight when you are doing your negotiation, because HR folk really take that strongly into mm-hmm. account in terms of the years of experience there and the amount of actual work experience you do have.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I would also suggest that everybody who's listening who really wants this experience again goes onto the AAUW website, look and see that there are some Boston workshops coming up in September, and we still have some in August, and they're all around the city, and they typically tend to be in the evening.
And they're free to attend.
And they're free.
Perfect.
But like I mentioned, we are going to try to do them here on campus.
Awesome.
Here's another stat that really makes my skin crawl. Let me see if I can find it. I'm on their website poking around because I didn't memorize the statistics, but hang on a quick second. Where did that go? Men working full-time in Boston are almost twice as likely as women working full-time to earn $100,000 or more. Right? Men are almost twice as likely to earn six figures than women working full-time.
Wow.
In Boston.
That's
really, again, when you're making 80 cents on the dollar and you start that way,
right?
Through the AAUW material, I think I remember white women over the course of their career earn $1 million less than men.
Yikes. That's disappointing.
That's very disappointing.
So yeah. Make sure to negotiate what you're worth.
Right. And again, put aside your feelings and look at the facts. They're going to probably respect you more for doing this, because if they feel, sometimes if an employer sees that you're just willing to take what's given to you, it may make them stop and wonder how much are you going to advocate for things that you are doing for them.
Mm.
You know, if you have to talk to vendors, if you have to talk to other customers, internal or external clients, and you don't feel good negotiating, and that's part of your job, or that will make the company more profitable, then they may be a little hesitant about the fact that you just took the job.
Mm.
Or they may see you as being very desperate and wondering why that is. So you always want to negotiate. So I mentioned earlier, if you can't negotiate salary, if they say to you, listen, this is all I have in my budget line for this job, let's talk about some of the other things you can negotiate.
Definitely.
So right. Let me ask you, what's important to you in your jobs?
Time off.
Time off. Do you think you can negotiate that?
Yes.
How come?
Well, I would say that once you get past the salary piece, and if that's something that you can't negotiate, that's one of the other options that they may be able to throw you an extra day or two of vacation or PTO. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. So for some companies, they can do that, and some companies will do it a little bit more under the table between just you and your supervisor. If you can't do time off, what else is important?
Flexibility in my work schedule is really important. To me. And I read an interesting thing on the Muse, I think, the other day about the idea of if you feel like you need to prove kind of like what the kind of work that you can do, negotiate to start a flexible schedule after a certain amount of time. Is that a good idea?
Well, there's lots of different types of flexible schedules.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started working in career services years and years ago, the office was open, I think it was a 9 to 4, 8 to 4, 8:30 to 4:30 type of thing, and I had small children at home. And it was important to me that I minimize my childcare expenses.
Mm.
So I negotiated an 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., but that was my flexible work schedule.
That's great.
So there's one way, that's one thing you can do, is try to do it that way. Another flexible work schedule might be some work from home days,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a beautiful thing when you can get it, because we all know how wonderful the Boston traffic can be. And if you're taking the MBTA, driving, it's always a bit of a crapshoot about how long it's going to take you to get to work. And you think about how much more productive people can be when they don't have to deal with that mess in the morning and in the evening. I know personally the work from home days I have, the time in which I normally would be commuting, I'm already working.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Exactly.
Right? So that's definitely something that's negotiable for most jobs. I mean, obviously, if you're working retail and you have to deal with customers face-to-face and be on a sales floor, a work-from-home may not be Feasible, but maybe if you have a job like that and there's some administrative work you have to do, like record keeping or, you know, putting stuff into an Excel document, maybe that's the kind of thing that you negotiate. A couple of hours even, it can be a huge boon to both your physical self and your emotional, mental self, right?
Right.
So there's those types of flexible work schedules. Some companies don't care what hours you work. They just want the work to get done. So there are many organizations where, you know, think about the stock market, right? If you're working in the United States stock market and you're on the international desk, right, Hong Kong, you have to work the Hong Kong hours, not the New York Stock Exchange hours. So you may be working really crazy, well, crazy to me, a shift, overnight shift.
Yeah.
But again, if you have that flexibility and you can go to your company and say, hey, listen, I need some flexibility, maybe I can jump and work in with the international clients, taking those phone calls or fixing their, you know, doing remote work on their server or whatever it is.
Right.
You might be able to do that kind of thing. So there's lots of different flexible options.
Another thing that's important to me is professional development.
So talk about that. What does that look like to one of our students?
So it's possible that something that may be negotiated is tuition pay. So the opportunity and the finances to actually get a master's or get your EIT. Yeah, the engineering training and then into the full-time engineer. I forget the exact name of it. But yeah, any certifications. Yeah, the professional engineer. Thanks, Robin. The PE.
If you want to become a scrum master, if you're working in tech and you work in a project management office, that would be something that costs a little bit of money.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Architects have to take tests.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So professional development can look like a few different things. It could be an accredited degree. It could be a professional certificate, a non-professional certificate, or like what we do, we also go to a lot of conferences, and I think of that as that's a lot of professional development. We don't earn any type of credit for it, but we always come back with some nuggets that
so
we can
valuable.
Apply to our work.
Yeah, and that's great for you, to, not only for that job, but if you are interested in switching careers or looking into another company, those are skills you can bring with you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
If the company has a retirement package, would you be able to negotiate that?
Sometimes. So again, I'm wearing my old human resources hat. There's something called ERISA, E-R-I-S-A, and it's a federal regulation that basically says you have to treat and give the same benefits to the same classification of employees. So not all employees get the same benefits, but maybe all executives get the same benefits, and all staff get the same benefits, and then all administrators get the same benefits. So typically, retirement plans would be kind of tight like that.
Right.
But I know some companies will let you forego a waiting period to get into a plan if you've already been in a plan that's similar at another employer. So you can check those types of things out. Like, in what ways can you participate sooner? Or are there other things that you can do that would minimize your vesting periods? Things like that. So, you know, we've talked about time off, we've talked about flexible work schedules, we've talked about retirement and professional development and tuition. Health insurance, dental insurance, eyeglass insurance, usually those are not so negotiable. There's also flexible spending accounts, again, not so negotiable. I'm trying to think of some of the other things that I have seen. Housing allowance. So if you have to move for a job, you can definitely negotiate moving costs. And sometimes housing allowances. So I've known some organizations that have put people up while they're looking for permanent, especially if you're relocating a good distance and it's a type of job that there is a desperate need for them to hire. I'm sorry, Rhea, you were going to say something.
What about sign-on bonuses?
It really depends on the economy, and it really depends, again, on a supply and demand, right? So if there's not a lot of people that are doing that job, or the market is really tight and there's low unemployment, that's when we see companies offering signing bonuses. So a lot of it's the economy. It's something you can always ask if that's a possibility. Some organizations actually do referral bonuses, which are pretty cool. So again, in a time of economic robustness, some companies will actually pay some employees, I've seen up to $2,000 for each referral. I remember at one company where I was in human resources, this one guy had 10 of his friends like get hired.
That's amazing.
And they had to stay. You have to stay. Yeah. They can't just get hired. They have to actually get onboarded, and I think they have to stay for like 2 months or six months. This guy made like $20,000 extra that year just because he had referred so many of his friends to the company.
That's amazing. Cool.
I know. I always thought as somebody that works in career services, I'd like to get those referral bonuses when I send students, but I think that's not ethical.
No. So what about like parking or commuting costs or like laptops and cell phones and stuff like that?
Now, those are things that are definitely more negotiable than some of the other things that we talked about. You should always be asking for those types of things. You know, talk about parking. If you're coming into the city,
yeah,
I mean, you're paying everything from zero to, gosh, I've seen some people pay over $500 a month to park in the city.
Yeah.
And it's probably even closer to $1,000, depending on where you are and what kind of building you're working in.
Right.
So can they subsidize that? T-passes are typically subsidized, depending on the organization. Mm-hmm. And again, that could be very little to... Some companies almost pay 100%, all of that. So those are the kinds of things that if somebody says to you, I can't budge on that salary dollar, those are all negotiable. They will not help you with those other things that we've talked about, which are those other pieces that are affected by your salary, though. So I guess to recap, you know, no one, men or women, should be afraid to ask for more.
Within reason.
Within reason. When you do your research, when you know what your market looks like, again, it's kind of like I'm just thinking about, would you go in and try to buy a $25,000 car and for $15,000, right? Like, you got to know what the prices are so you can negotiate reasonably. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to look foolish and try to really shoot for the moon when you know for a fact that you really, there's no good reason for that. You have to be able to give yourself a good sales pitch.
Right.
So you talk about, again, your skills, your experience, your education. Don't be afraid, too, to talk about some of your accomplishments outside of all of that. What have you done at school? Have you been part of a hackathon and done something really tremendous? I mean, what do you guys see some of the students doing that are always impressive to you?
Yeah, if they've started a business through Accelerate, or they ran the hackathon, or they did this amazing project that won an award, or they, you know, did the Baja.
They presented, or they built the concrete canoe, or some people built an app to help their families manage family chores at home. All sorts of stuff like that. I think, and definitely the class projects you work on, especially when you go and you present them at conferences. I've seen a couple of things on LinkedIn this summer where students are out there presenting.
Don't leave your senior design off your resume, people.
And put your competitions on there too. Like if you've gone and you've competed regionally or nationally or even internationally, think about some of those things, because you may think it's not important, but you never know what kind of thing will spark the interest of an employer.
Yeah, research you've done.
Absolutely. If you've been a guest on somebody's podcast, or you've written something that, you know, a research paper that was published, or anything really that's kind of gotten beyond your professor's desk, could be really helpful.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. And think about some of the software that you're learning here, or any of the other kind of really cool tools that we have here at Wentworth. A lot of employers out there would love to learn more about 3D printing or additive manufacturing. And you have those skills, and they don't. So that would make you more marketable as well. So again, that's really where the research comes in. You don't know what they need until you start researching it. So I guess I want to leave you with this. Don't be afraid. Do the research and ask for help. Your co-op and career advisor is here to help you with salary negotiation. We don't want you doing this by yourself. And if you're lucky enough to have actually multiple offers, you're going to want our help again, because it doesn't just come down to that dollar amount. We really want to teach you to look at the entire compensation package and the work environment, the work culture, the opportunity for growth, all of it. So know that we're here. We work 12 months out of the year, just like you all do. And our hours are always 8:15 to 4:45, Monday through Friday. And we'd love to be able to help you at any time. So I hope that we're going to see you all very soon. If you're a senior and you're listening to this show, still come in and talk to us. We'd love to be able to help you. And even for co-ops, some of those salaries are negotiable too. Let us help you find a good hourly wage. We can show you some stats about what people have made in the past, if we have it, around those organizations. We want to be able to help. So thank you very much.
Also, seniors, don't forget to complete your cap and gown survey.
Yep. Complete your cap and gown survey if you're coming. Well, you are going to be picking up your cap and gown today. So if you want to skip our table at pickup, then you can take the survey now or take it in line and show the volunteers that you took it with the confirmation email. But it is going to be a stop along your passport when you come to pick up cap and gown. You can follow us on Twitter or Instagram at WIC Co-ops and Careers. We still have drop-in hours through the end of the semester where classes are in session. So that's next Wednesday. Right?
Wednesday
is the last day of classes.
Study days.
Oh, no, so it's next Tuesday. So okay. this Wednesday, Thursday are the last day of drop-ins for the semester.
Drop-ins tomorrow, 2 to 4.
And we'd love to be able to take your photo and put it in our Instagram account. So follow us at
Hashtag WITS Working is the hashtag that we're using. And so we are taking photos of seniors who are searching for work, who are interviewing, who are accepted to grad school, and who have been hired. And we're going to have our photo booth set up at Cap and Gown Pickup today. So we'd love to celebrate with you and your plans for life after Wentworth.
Abby, can you talk really quickly about the employer that reached out based on that?
Oh, yes. So one of the features on this WITS Working campaign that we're doing is searching for, and we share the students' photo with the type of positions that they're searching for or their major, whatever you tell us that you want to share with an employer. And then we've put it out on social media. And last week we actually had an employer DM us on Instagram and say, we'd love to hire Wentworth students. We are hiring, I believe it was project management that they were looking to hire for. And so we got them set up on WITWorks. We got them posting the job. And that was an employer we maybe would have never even spoke to before.
That's amazing.
Thank you all for participating in the campaign. And we'd love to see more of you out there.
Yeah. So that's great. We'll see you later. We've got one more episode for the semester next week. And that'll do it for today.
Have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.